I get an opportunity to be at the forefront of an alien first contact, and I can't get an interpreter who lasts longer than a half hour," Renee grumped over the comm. "Julian, ask if the interpreter will revive before the day ends," Alex sent. "The mandator says that it is a certainty," Julian replied after questioning their host. Julian locked his avatar. The mandator stiffened stalks, and Renee sat on the short grass that circled the base of the life-giver and leaned against the back of Julian's legs. Meanwhile, Alex took up a perch on the traveler's steps so that he could keep an eye on Renee, while Zee, Miranda, and the twins kept a vigil over the surroundings. Hours later, Julian sent a quick message to the Omnians when he saw the interpreter stir, saying, "Sayers?" Renee struggled upright. "Julian," she sent, ensuring that the group at the Traveler was included on the comm, "we know we have a limited window of opportunity. Tighten the parameters on your requests." Julian tried to do that, but the interpreter's translation of the life-giver produced short statements about the superiority of flora over fauna, and Renee lost her patience. "Life-giver, you do know there is a fallacy in your argument," she declared, her hands balled on her hips. Julian translated for the mandator and the interpreter as, "Renee de Guernon, partner to our leader, dismisses the life-giver's statements." Umber interpreter was aghast at the creature's presumption. Flummoxed, the interpreter repeated the words and inadvertently transmitted them to the life-giver. "Enlighten us," the interpreter said, repeating the life-giver's response after the tree shook. "I'm human," Renee declared, and Julian translated. "You classify me as animal. But before you and by our ship stand Sades, who are neither plant nor animal. They possess great honor and loyalty to their kind, humans, and all manner of life. You stand rooted in your soil, requiring the light of your star to survive. But these Sades draw energy from stars, planets, and dead moons, where no life is found." "Inconceivable," was the life-giver's reply. "And that demonstrates the fallacy of your limited knowledge. Humans and Sades travel to the stars, building worlds where intelligent species live in peace, respecting one another. Life is not perfect, but they persevere. Can you claim as much when the Olasa have never left the worlds of light?"
"You spoke of a fallacy," the life-giver said through the interpreter.
"Yes, it's this. You argue for the superiority of plants over animals. That you believe in superiority demonstrates an inferior view of intelligent life. Inherent in those who believe they are superior is a will to dominate. The orb that you chased away is just such a species that believes they are superior to all forms of life, and they destroy other living things with impunity. You would argue for which form of life deserves the loftier role in the universe. Therefore, I ask you, whose view of life has the greater truth? Yours, which argues for tiers, requiring intelligent species to accept their roles, or ours, which says that there are no tiers, only those who will live in peace and those who won't?"
"Brilliant logic, my love," Alex sent, his thought wrapped in a heady mix of admiration and desire.
"My bladder has been full for a while, and I want to bring this silly discussion to an end," Renee shot back, and the calm was filled with laughter.
"Necessity, a powerful motivator," Julian sent.
The interpreter completed the lengthy translation from Julian to the life-giver. However, unlike previous exchanges, the great tree didn't respond immediately, and the Omnians were forced to wait. The soft rustle of leaves had Renee glancing upward, but it was only the freshening of a breeze.
"Let's just hope our interpreter doesn't pass out on us again, otherwise I'm going to need a break," Renee sent privately to Julian.
The interpreter stirred as the life-giver shook briefly.
"Ask, creature,"
the interpreter said, and Julian politely edited the message for the Omnians. It was Scarlet Mandator who had doubts about the translation. He had visited the Lifegiver many times and was attuned to the length of quivering compared to the delivered reply. In the Mandator's mind, the Lifegiver had communicated one word. He was suspicious of Umber Interpreter, who must have supplied the second. The ramifications of that thought shocked Scarlet Mandator.
"We request that you give permission to your Olasa to share what they know of the orb," Renee said.
After the translation reached the Lifegiver, the branches shook ever so briefly.
"Given, animal," the interpreter said.
Scarlet Mandator tilted the bloom to study Umber Interpreter. However, the gaze was lost on the Olasa, who had entered once again into a torpid state. The Mandator indicated the path to Julian and Renee with a single stalk. As the threesome proceeded down the meadow, the waiting Mandators were surprised to see Scarlet Mandator striding beside the small alien creature, the bloom held high. Chapter 6 The Orb. When Renee stepped off the path, she abandoned decorum and ran for the traveler, and Alex hoisted her neatly through the hatch. Scarlet Mandator stopped to share the Lifegiver's words with the other Mandators. There was no argument. The Lifegiver had spoken. The group of Olasa approached Julian, who stood beside Alex.
"Please explain to your leader, Julian, the records that you seek are kept at Mesa Control.
We have a rocky outcrop that manages our shuttle base," Scarlet Mandator said.
"We are aware of your shuttle site," Julian replied.
"I had assumed you were, but believed it polite to explain," the Mandator said, tipping a bloom. "The control center is buried beneath the mesa top. Access is by an elevator, either from the top of the mesa or from deep below, where our trams enter and leave. The only means of transport we might offer you is by way of our trams, and we must wait until a larger tram arrives to carry you and your people."
"Ask the Scarlet Mandator if the Olasa would like to travel aboard our shuttle to the mesa top," Alex said, having received Julian's translation, as did every Omnian. When Julian relayed the offer, the Mandators surrounding Scarlet Mandator shrank back. After a brief discussion, Scarlet Mandator announced to Julian that the other Mandators had declined Julian's offer.
"And you, Scarlet Mandator, what do you choose to do?" Julian asked.
Scarlet Mandator was torn, on the one hand intrigued at the prospect of riding in an alien vessel, and on the other hand, fearful at the prospect of being trapped in a vessel, which might be unprepared to supply the beneficent light. However, the occasion was too momentous to ignore the gesture, and anxiety was curbed.
"I will travel with you," Scarlet Mandator said.
Immediately, Z and Miranda boarded so they could occupy the rearward portion of the traveler's central aisle. Alex, Julian, and Etienne easily followed, and Alain waited for the Mandator to board. Scarlet Mandator approached the shuttle and tipped a bloom to regard the steep steps. The bright interior calmed the Olasa. Slowly, stalks navigated the incline. Inside the shuttle, the Mandator swung a bloom right and left, first taking in the massive progenitors at the shuttle's rear, and then Julian at the front, who beckoned the Mandator forward.
"I believe our travelers might need a redesign," Julian sent to the Omnians. "Some sort of nanites-triggered seats that reform when the species is detected."
"Expensive accommodations," Alain replied.
"Especially at the rate that Alex collects aliens," Etienne added. "We would need to upgrade once every few years."
Scarlet Mandator's bloom swung rearward, realizing the last progenitor had boarded, shut the hatch, and the ship had darkened. Regarding the seats designed to hold the aliens' forms, the Mandator realized there was no gel enclosures, which sent stalks and fronds trembling. Alex signaled the traveler's controller to bring the main cabin's lights full up.
"Julian, the holovid," Renee sent with urgency. "Show the Mandator the ground view."
Julian linked to the controller's telemetry and held up the holovid toward the Mandator's bloom.
"This is the view outside of our shuttle, Scarlet Mandator," Julian said.
The Mandator was slow to understand the progenitor's words, but as Julian continued to explain what was presented, the meaning penetrated. Fronds and stalks ceased their trembling. The return of the seedling ship's bright lights had helped.
"We have lifted?" Scarlet Mandator questioned.
"Yes," Julian replied. The Mandator's bloom swung to examine the alien seats more closely. They weren't gel enclosures, merely an arrangement to recline upon. Eagerly, the Mandator returned to the view from Julian's device, listening to the running commentary the progenitor offered. Quicker than Scarlet Mandator could have believed, the ship was above the mesa top and settling down on an outcrop, away from Olasa shuttle activity.
"We will exit now," Julian said to the Mandator, turning off the holovid and gesturing toward the shuttle's rear.
Scarlet Mandator turned a bloom in time to see the hatch open without the aid of one of the aliens. Stalks carefully managed the difficult task of turning around in the aisle. Alex sympathized with the Olasa, and kept to himself an offer to hoist the alien and reverse the Mandator's orientation. Scarlet Mandator realized the momentous offer that had been made to him by the progenitors. An Olasa would be the first to descend from an alien ship atop the mesa, the center of the planet's space effort. Stalks navigated the narrow aisle, and the Mandator paused in the open hatch, bloom held high, while surveying the Olasa who had gathered. After a few generous moments, Scarlet Mandator carefully descended the steep steps.
"I believe we made the dear alien's day," Miranda commented on the comm, after the Mandator was on the ground.
The Omnians piled off the traveler, and Alex ordered Franz to lift.
"Apologies, sir, but no can do. Admiral's orders," Franz sent back.
"Well, we wouldn't want Tatia angry with you, would we?" Alex sent, his humor evident.
His relaxed mood stemmed from his expectations. He was hoping to receive an enormous payoff for his dubious gamble to follow the Olasa warship and confront the plant entities on their homeworld.
"Is it my imagination, or is the Mandator walking a little funny?" Renee asked over the comm.
"Odd as it appears, I believe the dear one is strutting," Miranda replied.
Instead of keeping the stalks flexed, facilitating an easy stride, the Mandator was walking with them fully extended, as if on stilts.
"Well, sirs, let's make like a parade and follow the leader," Alex added, and the Omnians fell in behind Scarlet Mandator.
At a massive elevator housing, probably overbuilt to protect it from shuttle or fuel accidents, a number of Olasa scuttled aside to allow the Mandator and aliens unfettered access to the car. When it arrived, three Taskers exited the elevator, hurrying past the Omnians, their blooms twisting behind them for second looks even after they passed. Scarlet Mandator strode onto the elevator car and relaxed the stalks after the car doors closed. Sympathetic expressions passed between the Omnians. It appeared as if the Mandator's performance had cost the Olasa some precious energy. Descending to a lower level, the car stopped, and the Mandator led the Omnians down a wide corridor. Mandators, monitors, taskers, and other Olasa castes squeezed aside to give the aliens a wide berth. Scarlet Mandator signaled the progenitors to wait and entered the primary center for Mesa control.
"Flame Executor," the Mandator announced. "On the words of the Scarlet Life-Giver, the aliens are to view the records of the events surrounding the giant orb."
Activity in the command center halted as blooms swung the Mandator's way, but a rebuke from the Executor returned them to their tasks.
"Mist Monitor, Provide the Mandator with access to the alternate command center and set up the records list. You're to remain with the Mandator until the aliens are satisfied with the viewing. Understood? The Executor ordered.
Yes, Flame Executor,
Mist Monitor acknowledged, and followed the Mandator out of the primary command center.
This way, Scarlet Mandator, Mist Monitor said,
hurrying to the forefront of the group and freezing when confronted by a broad, powerful alien. Stalks and fronds were close to collapsing. Miranda stepped aside and swept an arm in the direction that the Olasa with the muted blue bloom was headed.
"Recognize, Olasa, that you appear odd to us, too," Miranda said as the monitor passed. The Sayd had generated the ultrasonic wavelengths through her mouth, as Julian had done. Briefly, Mist Monitor considered the progenitor's words. Could the aliens find the Olasa as intimidating or as repulsive as they did them? The monitor wondered. Farther along the main corridor, Mist Monitor tipped a bloom toward a small glass plate set beside a pair of doors. Signaled, the doors opened. Inside, the monitor set about activating the backup command center. When up and running, Mist Monitor accessed a panel and searched the Mesa Control's archives for the requested events. The Mandator was required to unlock the carefully protected files for viewing. The twins took up posts when they entered the command center. Etienne positioned himself in a corner where he could watch the entire room, and Alain stood slightly to the left of the twin door's seam, prepared to intercept anyone coming through them.
"Ready, Scarlet Mandator," the monitor announced.
"Julian, what does your leader wish to see?" the Mandator asked. "A close-up of the orb first, Julian," Alex sent when he received the question.
"He requests a view of the orb in its entirety, Mandator," Julian repeated.
The blooms of the Olasa tipped briefly toward each other before the Mandator asked,
"Julian, you say your leader requested this of you now?"
"Yes."
"But the formations on the head that produce words, as was seen at the sight of the Lifegiver, did not move," the Mandator said.
"True, Scarlet Mandator. My leader speaks to me with his mind," Julian replied, tapping his temple.
"And you hear this and can reply to him in this manner?" the Mandator asked.
"Yes, my leader is an exceptional form of fauna, but I'm much more," Julian replied, knowing Alex and the other Omnians were linked to him. Julian received an image from Alex of his head growing larger, like a balloon expanding, until it burst, sending miniature Julians scampering everywhere. The image war ended abruptly when the Mandator directed Julian's attention toward a panel.
"Can you see what is displayed here, Julian?" Scarlet Mandator asked.
Julian examined the panel, and Z got as close as his Cedric Broussard avatar would allow. The Sayds ran spectral scans on the panel's output until Z identified the frequency spectrum. Julian tweaked the display in his kernel until the image represented something that was manageable by human sight. Then Julian broadcast his view of the panel to the Omnians.
"This is further proof that the Olasa orb is not the Libran sphere," Z commented. "This one has a different ring configuration."
Miranda was quickly assimilating the conversation and data. She possessed Z's general knowledge, but not the data trove Z had accumulated when he was aboard the city ship Our People. That hefty bit of data had been transferred to Harrigan's central exchange vault, and later copied to the Freedom, the other city ship stationed at Omnia.
"What's the date of incursion, Julian?" Alex asked.
It seemed politer and less confusing for the Olasa if he spoke his questions. In response to the progenitor's request, Mist Monitor politely pointed to the file date at the corner of the imagery, but it meant nothing to the Omnians. Z was able to link to Franz's traveler, although the connection through the massive layers of heavy rock was weak. He culled through the telemetry data collected by the Vivian's Sayds to obtain the orbital speeds of the homeworld.
by which it was assumed the Olasa would mark their annual cycle. While the Sades worked, Alex and Renee leaned against the wall opposite from the bank of panels and workstations. Scarlet Mandator eyed the pair of leaders.
"Stalks don't lock?" he asked Julian.
"Fauna," Julian replied, and the Mandator tipped the bloom in understanding. The Sades were able to calculate the Omnian equivalent of the Olasa annual cycle. Then they questioned Mist Monitor and obtained today's date. "By our calculations, Alex, this event took place 58.65 years ago," Julian said. "Julian, have the monitor play any vids they have of events surrounding the orb after its incursion," Alex requested. He never left his post against the wall, knowing it would take the Sades more time to assimilate the disparate imagery. Mist Monitor began by playing a collection of image sequences, most of them taken from the ships that encountered the orb, at normal speed. When Z asked if the sequences could be played at a higher rate, the monitor pointed to a small slider to the left of the panel. Julian, who was closest to the slider, moved it up farther and farther until it reached its apex. After that, the Sades viewed the recorded image files at 20 times the normal rate. Mist Monitor spared a moment to regard the Mandator, who replied to the Olasa's unasked question with, "Aliens." Julian and Z collected more than 200 imagery files. While they recorded the data, Miranda stitched the imagery into a coherent record of what had taken place. "We're ready, Alex," Miranda said when her process was complete. "Play it," Alex said. Julian quickly informed the Olasa that they would be busy for a few moments, and he pointed to his temple. The Mandator's bloom tipped slightly in acknowledgement. Miranda projected the stitched imagery to the Omnians. The Nual sphere had moved into the Olasa system on a tangent that would have it intercepting the homeworld. Nearly 60 small ships left the planet's orbit to engage the sphere. At the same time, many more Olasa vessels left orbits around other planets and moons, where bases were established, to join in the fight. As the Olasa ships neared the sphere, it rotated its upper and lower halves in opposite direction, as the Nual vessel did at Libra. Two bullet-shaped ships emerged from two different ports, 180 degrees apart, located around the sphere's midline, which the separating halves of the sphere had revealed. The Omnians knew these were the sphere's primary defense. "Only two?" Alex sent. "I wonder if this sphere lost some of its bullet ships in prior conflicts." "We don't have imagery that encompasses the entire sphere," Miranda sent in reply. "However, we have enough visuals to identify three of the large ports. During the upcoming fight, only these two bullet ships, which you witnessed exiting, were ever seen."
"Odd warships from these worlds," Etienne commented, taking in the shapes of the Olasa vessels as they closed in on the bullet ships.
The ugly truth behind Etienne's comment became clear as Miranda continued spooling out the compiled vid. The bullet ships began firing their beams, and the Olasa ships were destroyed two and three at a time. Soon, the mass of defenders scattered, seeking to swarm the interlopers from all directions.
"Julian, ask the Mandator what sort of weapons the Olasa ships carried. I'm not discerning their offensive actions," Alex requested.
Julian knew the answer to Alex's question, but he considered that it was best that Scarlet Mandator become aware that the Omnians knew of the Olasa's sacrifice.
"At the time of the Great Orb's arrival, our ships had no means of repelling invaders," the Mandator replied. "We weren't even aware of the possibility that there would be ships from beyond the worlds of light. We foolishly believed the light was reserved only for us."
Julian relayed the Mandator's words, and a short exhale of sympathy escaped Renee's lips before she covered her mouth. Alex frowned, and his jaw tightened, popping out the muscles along the sides.
The Omnians watched in horror as ship after ship of the Olassa dove at the two bullet ships, only to end up as space debris. Finally, the strategy of swarming one of the sphere's bullet ships paid off. Two small Olassa ships, approaching from opposite sides of the enemy ship, managed to get through the deadly beam strikes and impact the Nual Protector. The three vessels burst into an expanding ball of tortured metal, hot gases, and organic debris. Afterwards, the remaining bullet ship immediately retreated toward the Nual sphere. Once it was recovered, the sphere accelerated out of the system. The small Olassa craft valiantly attempted to catch the fleeing sphere, but they quickly fell behind.
"May the stars protect the Olassa," Rene sent in the hush that followed the ending of Miranda's vid.
"The poor dear ones died by the thousands to defend their system," Miranda added.
"Julian, send my condolences to the Mandator and the Monitor on the loss of so many brave Olassa to chase the sphere from their worlds of light," Alex sent. When Julian relayed the message, the Olassa tipped their blooms deeply, and Mist Monitor wondered if perhaps, alien or not, the visitors might not be so different from the Olassa.
"Well, now we know why these early space explorers were able to succeed against the sphere," Alex sent. "The Nual had already lost two of their four bullet ships in some other system or systems. Then, when the Olassa refused to retreat and attacked with every ship they had, the sphere lost a third bullet ship. With only one remaining defender, the Nual ran for it."
"We wish to determine the path the Great Orb took when it left the system," Julian said to the Mandator.
Mist Monitor accessed charts of the Olassa system and the surrounding stars, presenting it as a view from across the ecliptic. Then the Monitor added the last position of the orb before it recovered its last defender and headed out of the system. A line was added that extended from that position to the last sighting of the orb by the Olassa. The Sades immediately recorded that piece of valuable information.
"Do you have any more questions for the Mandator, Alex?" Julian asked.
Alex ruminated on the information they'd received. It appeared he had everything the Sades and he needed. Alex's impression of the Olassa was that they were an insular species. They would focus on developing their system's resources, but Alex thought they would never travel beyond the limit of their precious light. As such, the Olassa would probably never become Omnian allies in the fight against the Nual.
"Problem, Alex?" Julian asked privately, noticing the frown on his friend's forehead.
"I don't like the idea of leaving the Olassa to the mercy of the next sphere, especially if it has a full complement of defending ships or even more powerful offensive armament," Alex sent in reply.
"We have the option of doing the same thing we did for the Sui Sui at Libra," Julian sent.
"Ask the Mandator if the Olassa would want it," Alex replied.
"Scarlet Mandator, we have gathered the information on our enemy that we required. Before we leave, we have an offer for you," Julian said.
"Any offer must be received by a group of, at a minimum, 5 Mandators, and 4 of the 5 must approve.
I will arrange it," Scarlet Mandator replied, and hurried from the backup center.
Mist Monitor stepped away from the panels. Required to stay, the Olassa was unsure of whether to engage the aliens in conversation.
"Mist Monitor, René de Guirnon, one of our leaders, requests a favor of you," Julian said.
"She would like to approach you and touch the petals of your bloom. Is this allowed?"
The Monitor glanced at the small alien. Of any of the progenitors, it seemed safest to interact with this one. Curiosity drove the Monitor's thoughts. The life-givers created all Olassa, who lived until Stalks and Franz failed. Olassa lives were highly communal. However, in many respects, their lives differed greatly from animals, who produced and nurtured young. Thus, Olassa lives were characterized by an element of isolation.
"The petals only, Julian,"
The bloom is sensitive, Miss Monitor replied.
On receiving Julian's translation, Renee slowly approached the monitor. She couldn't resist the temptation to touch one of the aliens, who resembled the beautiful flowers of the worlds she had visited. While facing the monitor, she carefully lifted an arm to the side. The monitor's bloom tipped toward her hand, but then turned to face her. Delicately, Renee touched the top of a single petal. She expected it to be soft and give under her touch, but while the petal's surface gently tickled her finger, it had a degree of tension. She touched other petals, relishing the feel and elasticity. Soon the monitor's bloom tilted down to allow Renee more access. At one point, Renee slipped a finger under a petal, and it curled momentarily around her finger, which made her smile.
"You had best be careful, Alex," Miranda said privately. "The Olasa might decide to keep us animals here to be their massage therapists and groomers."
"Miss Monitor does seem to be enjoying it," Alex replied, noticing Renee was using both hands to stroke the underside of the monitor's petals, which fluttered and curled under the touch of her fingers. On the hiss of the doors sliding open, Renee stepped back, and Mist Monitor broke from reverie. The Olasa was saddened by the curtailment of the wonderful sensations.
"We're ready, Julian," the Mandator announced. The senior Olasa led the group to a meeting room farther down the main corridor. Typical for the species, the room was bare of furniture. Four Mandators stood with stiffened stalks at the far end of the room, and the Omnians occupied the other end, which left Scarlet Mandator standing in the center. Mist Monitor chose to attend the meeting, despite not being invited. Then again, the Mandator hadn't said that attendance was forbidden. There were a few humorous comments sent between the Omnians when they noticed Mist Monitor was standing next to Renee. "Julian," the Mandator said, indicating with a stalk a nearby position to the alien.
"Mandators, thank you for hearing our offer," Julian began congenially. "We will soon depart your worlds of light, but we would like to offer you a gift before we leave. We're concerned for your safety if a sphere returns. Our analysis of the imagery of your conflict with the Great Orb indicates that the Nual ship had only half the usual defenders. The next orb might be better protected."
"What do you offer?" Citrin Mandator asked.
The Olasa had recently arrived on the tram with the other Mandators from the site of the Scarlet Lifegiver.
"We have a means of allowing you to communicate with us anywhere among the stars, far beyond that of the light. If another great orb arrives here, you only need to push a single button and we will come to help you repulse your enemy."
"Why would you offer this?" another Mandator asked.
"Why shouldn't all intelligent species assist one another?" Julian asked in reply.
"It's an animal trick," Citrin Mandator challenged.
"The progenitors came from beyond the light to rescue their seedling," Scarlet Mandator replied. "How did they know to come here?"
"I've no doubt the progenitors have the capability," Citrin Mandator retorted. "But I say it's a trick. The device isn't designed to contact them. It's probably designed to watch us, or worse, to poison us."
"All of you know the progenitors travel between the stars, and you've witnessed their ship's advanced technology, which can maneuver in ways we can't even comprehend. Do you doubt they could eliminate all Olasa life if they so choose? Why would they need to trick us?"
Scarlet Mandator said, rising on stalks, and the Omnians took that as a sign of the Olasa's passion. The four Mandators began conducting a private conversation, and Scarlet Mandator joined them. For the Omnians, it was surprising that Olasa discussions required such an extensive amount of time to conclude. It was close to 2 hours later when Scarlet Mandator approached Julian.
"I offer my regrets, Julian. Only 3 Mandators approved of your offer," the Mandator said. Julian relayed the message, thanked the Mandators for their time, and led the Omnians out of the room. Scarlet Mandator and Mist Monitor followed the progenitors down the main corridor. At Mesa Control's primary command center, the Monitor halted. It was time to return to duty. Belatedly, Renee noticed that Mist Monitor had stopped. The bloom focused on her, and she hurried back to the Monitor. "Halt!" Alex sent to Alain when the escort meant to follow Renee. Renee used both hands to stroke the petals on the sides of the Monitor's bloom. She laid a finger of each hand under a single petal, which curled tightly around them before releasing her fingers. Then Renee quickly hurried to join the Omnians, a huge smile on her face. "How to win alien friends," Miranda commented over the comm. Scarlet Mandator's bloom had swung between the Monitor and the little alien during their interaction. The Mandator was unsure of what had taken place, but the Olasa had every intention of discovering it later. Exiting the elevator at the mesa top, Scarlet Mandator said farewell to the progenitors. Julian relayed their appreciation for the Olasa's help. Then the Omnians boarded their traveler. "Julian, seed this system. I want a comm station with observation capability tucked somewhere in the system's outer limits, where the station is unlikely to be discovered. Then send 3 more observations drones around the system's periphery." "We will support the Olasa whether they wish it or not. Is that the case?" Julian replied. "Not sure, Julian," Alex replied as he closed his eyes and leaned back in his seat. "Maybe it's not to protect the entire species. Maybe it's to protect Mist Monitor. If something happens to that particular Olasa, my partner might never forgive me," Alex added, reaching a hand out for Renee's. Chapter 7 Omnia. While the squadron and the Vivian returned to Omnia, the Sage used the information provided by the Olasa to overlay their extensive star charts. They worked to narrow the field of potential next destinations for the Nual Sphere. Alex had been brooding since the Omnians left the Olasa system, and Renee and Julian decided an intervention was necessary. In a small meeting room aboard the OS Liberator, Julian asked a key question. "We have vectors for the sphere's entry into and exit from the Olasa system, Alex. Do you intend to see where it came from, in case we can trace the sphere back to its home world, or do you wish to pursue the great orb?" Julian thought injecting a tiny bit of humor would get a rise from Alex, but he sat with arms folded and staring into space. "It's polite to answer your friend, my love," Renee sent privately. "Sorry, Julian," Alex said, and replayed Julian's question from his implant. "We could be centuries backtracking along the sphere's previous stops. We've no idea how long the Nual have been gone from their homeworld. Sometimes I wonder if their homeworld exists anymore." "So we pursue our quarry," Julian said. "It's a possibility," Alex replied, but he didn't put much conviction behind his words. Julian and Renee exchanged concerned looks. Julian was intent on analyzing Alex's words, but Renee intuited the problem and arrived first at the answer. "My love, I wish you'd admit what you've already decided," Renee said. "But I haven't decided anything yet," Alex objected. "But you have, Alex," Julian added, recognizing that Renee had accurately identified the reason for Alex's somber mood. "Will you two stop ganging up on me?" Alex complained. "You want to chase the Olasa sphere, correct?" Renee said, intent on having Alex confront what was bothering him. "Yes," Alex quietly admitted. He leaned on the table, steepling his hands and fingertips touching his chin.
But you're concerned for what that decision will mean for Omnia, which is in a nascent state, Julian added.
Yes, that too, Alex replied.
What happened to Harrigan? Renee asked.
What do you mean? Alex asked.
Did it collapse when you stepped down as president or when we left? Renee challenged.
That's not a fair comparison, Renee. Harrigan was well established before any of those events occurred.
Alex pushed away from the table and began to pace. Renee and Julian exchanged brief smiles. Alex's pacing was a good sign. It meant he was engaged.
Alex, I believe what will ensure Omnia's future is solid financial growth potential, much as what Harrigan possessed, Julian hinted.
Alex stopped pacing and focused on Julian. When Alex and Julian stilled, Renee slipped out of the meeting room. As she entered the corridor, she muttered, "Finally." The Omnian warship squadron and the Vivian exited space into the Sealus system. Alex stayed off the comm, allowing the Sage to communicate. A great deal more information could be passed more accurately and much quicker through them.
"Welcome home, Alex," Senior Captain Cordelia of the City Ship Freedom sent.
"Thank you, Captain," Alex sent in reply.
"We see you've recovered our wayward scout ship. Well done, Alex. Julian tells me that you were unable to adopt the new aliens."
"The Olasa are probably generations away from wishing to join the worlds of humans, who they think of as animals, and Sades, who they don't comprehend."
"It's probably just as well, Alex. Lately, life is getting complex enough. You have guests who arrived 5 days ago."
"That sounds cryptic, Captain."
"You will be pleased to see Envoy Maria Gonzalez again. You might not be pleased to be introduced to the man who accompanies her. The new Terran Assembly has elected an admiral to command its Trident Squadron."
"That definitely doesn't sound good," Alex replied. "I'll meet the Sayre soon enough, but let me pass you to Renee. She's been anxious to speak with you."
"Greetings, Sayre," Cordelia sent, when Alex's bio-ID was replaced by Renee's on the comm.
"Greetings, Cordelia. I want to celebrate the recovery of our three Sades. Let's have a fete aboard the Freedom the next evening after we make orbit."
"If I might make a suggestion, Sayre. Captain Hector has been anxious to have an opportunity to display the Our People's reconditioned status."
"That's a wonderful idea, Cordelia. We'll hold the fete on his city ship. Please relay my request to him."
There was a brief silence, much too long for a Sayd.
"Cordelia, speak up. We've known each other too long, at least in human years, not to be direct."
"Sayre, Hector is quite proud of what he's accomplished after Alex appointed him captain."
"I see. It would mean a great deal to Hector if the request came from Alex," Renee replied.
"You understand the situation clearly, Sayre.
Consider it done, Cordelia." After reaching Omnia's orbit, Renee was able to return to her considerably more expansive staterooms aboard the Freedom. The suite was designed and built, courtesy of the Sage, during the reconditioning of the city ship. Alex requested Franz to transport him from the OS Liberator to the Sardi Talon orbital platform. The design of the scout ships necessitated that the three Sages be loaded aboard, one at a time, down the length of the slender hull. Then they were required to lock their avatars for the entire journey. Due to the scout ship's overall length, the vessel couldn't be recovered by one of the tridents. It was the orbital platform that was a convenient location to disembark the Sades from their scout ship. Julian signaled Killian that Alex was coming to meet them. The Vivian's Sade delayed his landing at the station until he detected Alex exiting a traveler in a platform's bay near to where the scout ship would dock. Alex had no need to hurry. He knew when he told Julian that he wanted to greet the Sades that his friend would arrange everything. Alex was aware he could never compete with much of what the Sades could achieve computationally,
but he could demonstrate to the digital entities, his friends, what it meant to be human. A little smile crossed Alex's face when he arrived at the docking bay in time to witness the Vivian slide into place. He watched the Sades exit their ship and enter the airlock, looking the same as they did the day they crawled backward into the scout ship, except for the odd creases in their wardrobes. Killian broke into a huge smile at the sight of Alex when he gained the corridor. The hug from Alex was expected and appreciated. Bethley extended her hand in greeting to Alex, but she received the same treatment as Killian. "You should enjoy it," Killian sent to Bethley, when he saw her blank expression over Alex's shoulder. "It seems an unnecessary gesture," Bethley replied. "Much about human practices seem unnecessary, even frivolous, Bethley, until you understand the reason for these demonstrations." Bethley stepped aside, and Trium happily accepted his hug.
"While I can't say I comprehend why Docita employs this particular gesture, I for one am delighted that it means I was valued, missed, and now welcomed home," Trium sent.
"Get your wardrobes in order for a fete tomorrow night aboard the Our People, Sayers. You'll be the guests of honor," Alex said, and promptly left the Sage to return to his traveler and join Renee aboard the Freedom.
"Why should we be honored for being captured and requiring every Trident warship to come to our aid?"
Bethley sent to her companions.
"Come, and I'll explain," Killian sent in reply.
In a quick flight from the orbital platform, Alex and Franz landed aboard the Freedom. They'd missed evening meal and decided to enjoy some food together before retiring to their cabins. There were no intimate dining facilities aboard the enormous vessel, which was constructed to house an eighth of a million people for decades. As the two Omnians reached a meal room's double doors, Alex said, "We have company," and he grinned at Franz. The twin doors slid apart, and the noise of hundreds of fellow diners reached them.
"I forgot the Trident crews would be late to mealtime, too," Franz sent to Alex.
Reiko hurried to hug Franz, and the couple walked to a seat she'd saved for him. Alex glanced around and saw many of his friends paired up. Reiko and Franz, Alain and Tatia, Etienne and Ellie, Ben and Simone, Julian and Cordelia, and Z and Miranda. Of course, the Sades weren't dining, but they were joining in the lively conversation. Presumably, the premier subjects were the Olasa and the Omnians' adventures on the Olasa homeworld.
"And you'd risk their lives to chase entities that might never come this way. If only I could be sure of that," Alex thought.
A slender arm slipped through Alex's while he'd been musing.
"I heard that stomach grumbling while you were out in the corridor, my love,"
Renee whispered in Alex's ear.
"Let's feed that enormous belly of yours."
Alex patted his stomach. 23 years after meeting the love of his life, it was still flat.
"And keep it that way," Renee chided.
A host of server attendants populated the meal room. They'd extended their shifts, knowing the fleet would make orbit late. The crews would be hungry, but more than that, they'd be anxious for a taste of life aboard the city ship. For the Omnian crews, the vessel, with its enormous gardens of trees, flowering shrubbery, and bubbling brooks, was a heartwarming place they thought of as home. Lining the parks was a collection of shops, eateries, goods, and entertainment that could fill an evening and afford an opportunity to relax and mix.
"Didn't you eat?" Alex asked as he chose an intimate table for the two of them, and the nanite's active narrow seat under him adjusted to accommodate his width.
"Of course I did. Only one of us is a foolish heavy-worlder who ignores his needs," Renee replied tartly. Alex's eyes narrowed at Renee, and she returned his stare with a warm smile.
"Ah," Alex said softly, realizing that Renee was intent on shifting his mood.
"It was only there for a moment," he protested.
"And who knows how long you'd have stood there brooding,
when you should be eating before I interrupted you, Renee shot back. Servers headed the couple's way, interrupting their discussion. Renee had signaled she'd eaten, which meant the pile of food dishes, warm buns, and pitcher of hot tea were intended entirely for Alex. Every new Terran heavyworlder tended to absorb 2 to 3 times more food than their companions of Meridian origin, and Alex was one of the largest heavyworlders. The only Omnian greater in size than Alex was Benjamin Little Ben Diaz, who was sitting with his tiny Meridian partner, Simone, and shoveling food as if it would disappear before he could consume it. Alex nodded his thanks to the servers, who smiled at the sound of his gurgling stomach as he took in the rich, delectable scents. As had become his habit, Alex ate directly from the serving dishes, which had been designed to accommodate the appetites of slender Meridians. Tatia waited until Alex had a good start on his meal before she stood, quieting the audience. There was a moment when Simone had to gain Ben's attention. A brief tittering from the others at his table accompanied his belated action to put down his utensil and a roll. "We've no guests from whom to request a story," Tatia announced. "Nonetheless, most of us were aboard our ships when momentous events took place on the Olasa planet. We, the crew, request a story from Ser." Clapping and stomping accompanied Tatia's statements, and Renee rose, hushing the crowd with upraised hands. "I don't want to delay your enjoyment of these meals," Renee said. "Therefore, I'll tell you a short story of your choice." The crews took up a chant of, "Mist Monitor." Renee smiled at their choice. "Well, my story might have been much longer and more exciting if my partner hadn't hustled us off the planet so quickly," Renee said with a grin. "Alex was afraid of the competition," a crew member yelled from deep in the room. "The possibilities of that are strong, sir," Renee replied, and Alex grinned at the supposition. Renee related the story of her encounter with the Olasa, enthralling her audience with her desire to touch Mist Monitor's entrancing petals and the entity's reactions to her fingers. When she finished and sat down, the crews were quiet, absorbing the concept of intimately interacting with an alien who resembled a walking plant. "An adventuresome woman, my partner," Alex broadcast to the room, which broke the diners into laughter and polite applause. Plates were cleaned of every scrap by the hungry crews of the squadron and the city ship. Tea and agar, a favorite Meridian drink, were consumed. Eventually the room quieted, except for the sounds of Alex and Ben finishing their meals. Tati awaited respectfully for the 2 huge new Terrans to drain the last of their tea. When their service was removed from their tables, she stood again. "We have one more request for a story. We would hear from Julian about his contact with Scarlet Mandator." Alex was one of the first to lead the applause and stamping, doing both. Over the noise could be heard an assortment of unusual but entrancing sounds issued by the Sades. Over the course of time on Herrikan and Omnia, no one could remember when the courtesy of a story had been requested of a Sade. Julian rose and projected from his synth skin an ancient pointed felt cap with a long feather that swept rearward. Crew members trapped images in their implants. Immediately after their meal, they could compete to see who could discover first the historical source of Julian's choice of haberdashery. The Olasa see the creatures of their worlds of light as falling into the categories of either flora or fauna, Julian began. Humans, to them, appear as the latter group. Animals, they called our biological friends. I must admit that after conversing with Scarlet Mandator for a period of time, and discovering the Olasa's superb sensitivities on many subjects, I was torn between keeping this human-style clothing or wearing a covering of leaves. Much of the audience was stunned by Julian's opening, but those humans who knew the Sades best howled and whistled at his jest. Other crew members applauded timidly.
too much?" Julian sent privately to Alex.
"I love it," Alex replied. "But you might be scaring our newest Omnians."
"However," Julian continued, "the latter direction appeared to be fraught with a number of challenges. For instance, if one was to be true to the Olasa's example, should my foliage be real, or could it be faux?" The audience chuckled and tittered at the idea of Julian wearing dirt and leaves, which would require diligent maintenance, and Julian warmed to his subject. Then there was the question of accommodation. Surely if I was to produce a live garden for my covering, then it would most likely attract an assortment of birds and insects. And I wondered if that would make me their host. Was I now responsible for their well-being? By now the audience was roaring with laughter, and Julian hung his head as if the weight of the decision was too much for him. In the end, I admit the choice was beyond my limited capabilities to decide. I realized that I must relent. I was neither plant nor animal. I'm just a sade. The crews rose from their seats, applauding and stomping. Alex's whistle pierced the noise and joined with the cacophony of tones produced by the sades. Cordelia sent Julian an algorithm snippet for Julian's synth skin to display, and in a single tick he installed it. As Julian bowed from the waist, he reached for his feathered cap, transferring the projection from his crown to his hand. It appeared as if he swept the virtual cap from his head in a broad flourish. Whistles and renewed shouts demonstrated the crew's hearty approval of the trick, and Julian extended a hand toward Cordelia, who rose and accepted the audience's appreciation.
"Well done, Julian," Alex sent. "I loved the lesson. However we're born, we must make the most of who and what we are."
Renee woke in the early hours of the morning and stretched an arm across Alex's chest, only to discover he wasn't beside her. "I know I had a man when I went to bed," she muttered. A quick check of Alex's location by her implant app located him on the city ship's bridge in the company of Tatia and the Sades. "As if the calculations couldn't have waited until a decent hour," she said, annoyed with her partner, and snuggled deeper into the welcoming bedclothes. On the bridge, Alex examined the Sade's projection of the Olasa system in the holovid. Overlaying the star and planets were the vectors of the Nual sphere. The vessel entered the system's space on one trajectory and immediately changed course to intercept the Olasa homeworld, Tatia said, eyeing the display. Executing an 83.5-degree port turn on the horizon and a 23.7-degree swing upward toward the ecliptic, Z added. "Which gives us no idea of their prior destination," Alex said. "I'm more interested in their final moments in the Olasa system." From the time the sphere collected the remaining bullet ship, its course never varied, as it left the system and continued on, Julian said. "What is a notable point, Alex," Miranda added, "is that the sphere didn't take the shortest route to exit the system or evade the Olasa ships. The Nual might have chosen a course directly above or below the ecliptic. They could effect a transition much quicker and more safely that way." "Instead, they selected this course," Tatia said, highlighting the display, "which did require them to outrun the swarm of small Olasa ships."
"Which means the Nual had selected their next destination and wanted to proceed in that direction despite the present danger," Alex surmised.
"Now isn't that odd?"
"It's certainly not smart," Tatia commented.
"It does, however, indicate a presumption of superiority over other species, which is consistent with the actions of the Nual," Julian replied.
"I wonder how they're targeting the systems," Alex said quietly. "Do these spheres have the telemetric capability to accumulate data on the planet environments they need across great expanses of space?
Or have they been selecting these destinations over time by some other method, such as probes? Immediately, the SAIDs dove into the accumulated OLASA telemetry data collected by the squadron and the scout ship. They sifted through exabytes of data, searching for anomalies among the debris readings, trying to determine if they could detect the remains.